Ati svet parya bhuktas tvam sambojan vridha balakan jagupsitam karma kinchit kritavan nayat akshamam. So Yudhisthira is continuing with his hope against hope questions. And he says, have you not taken care of old men and boys who deserved to dine with you? Have you left them and taken your meals alone? Have you committed some unpardonable offense, mistake, which is considered to be abominable? And Prabhupada gives details in the purport why this is all cause for dejection. It is the duty of a householder to first feed all of the children, the old members of the family, the brahmanas, and the invalids. Besides that, an ideal householder is required to call for any unknown hungry man. To come and dine before him, dine before he himself goes to take his meals. He is required to call for a hungry man thrice on the road. The neglect of this prescribed duty of a householder, especially in the matter of the old men and children, is unpardonable. Let's go to the next purport here, too, these two verses. Kachit prestat. The mainata, this is 114.44. Hridayena mabanduna shuno smi rahito nityam manya se te nyata na ruk. Or is it that you are feeling empty for all time because you might have lost your most intimate friend, Lord Krishna? Oh, my brother Arjuna, I can think of no other reason for you becoming so dejected. And Prabhupada's purport to this verse, all the inquisitiveness of Maharaj Yudhisthira about the world situation was already conjectured by Maharaj Yudhisthira on the basis of Lord Krishna's disappearance from the vision of the world. And this was now disclosed by him because of the acute dejection of Arjuna, which could not have been possible otherwise. So even though he was doubtful about it, he was obliged to inquire frankly from Arjuna on the basis of Narada's indication. So this is the Bhaktivedanta purports, first canto, 14th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Disappearance of Lord Krishna. So it seems like this is just kind of a very natural development of the whole chapter. Of course, in general perspective, this is all just setting the scene for the meeting of Maharaj Pariksit and Sukadeva Goswami. This is all occurring in the first canto, which is like a preface. It's telling us who's talking to who, why they're talking, what is the circumstances, what do we expect of the reader of this book, like that. And so here it's describing the whole situation that Krishna Swadhamma Upagate Jnana Dharma Adibisaha Kalo Nasta Drasha Isha Puranarko Dunuritaha. That Krishna has left for his own abode, and when Krishna goes, religion, knowledge, renunciation, they all go with him. Yeah? And so the situation is a very, very difficult for situation for those who want to make some kind of progressive use in life of this world. And so therefore, we need a new incarnation. And so because of the meeting of Maharaj Pariksit and Sukadeva Goswami, we're going to have that incarnation. But it has to create the whole necessity like that. Always remember, like in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, maybe it's 15, 13, I guess it's 13, Kshetra, Kshetra, Gnorchapi. It's describing what is jnana, jnaya, what is knowledge, what is the goal of knowledge, what is the object of knowledge, the purpose of knowledge, how to acquire knowledge. So when it comes to acquiring knowledge, it gives like something like 26 elements or something, that are all the different things that we need to acquire knowledge. Of course, what is knowledge? Another question too. Knowing the capital of the United States of America, is that knowledge? And the public says, no, not really. Knowledge means ontological knowledge. What is the ultimate nature of things? Knowledge means knowledge which is true forever and always has been true. So then to acquire this kind of knowledge, the very first principle that Krishna offers is humility. Of course, they don't teach that in the university. Humility 101. Humility 1A, BC. But maybe something is there. But mostly we're just learning truth. All we're concerned about is truth. But it's the truth devoid of mercy, cleanliness, austerity, humility. So even Sir Isaac Newton, he was saying that if I've seen anything, very, very great about nature, it's because I've stood on the shoulders of giants who have gone before me, like Copernicus and Kepler. And he said, I'm just picking up a few truths on the shore of the ocean of knowledge. So he had some humility. He's considered the greatest scientist to ever live. So in that list of things for acquiring knowledge, there's taking shelter of the Supreme Lord, acquiring a guru. But also it says, janma mritya jara vyadhi dukkha doshan darshanam. One should develop a very cautious, careful, scrutinizing view of these four things, birth, death, disease, and old age. And that becomes the impetus then, for acquiring knowledge. So same way, Yudhisthira is going through all these different speculative inquiries, but is already, the situation of the world already is confirmed to him that none of these things could possibly be the real reason for Arjuna's rejection like that. So basically, in some ways, like it's hope against hope. Maybe even to contrast our desires, contrast the kind of catastrophes with the catastrophe we're actually facing. By going through these other catastrophes, it's like looking at the moon through the branches of the tree. We can see, begin to appreciate how far away is the moon, how great is this catastrophe. Always remember the story that Hari Prabhu tells, that Prabhupada was invited to one Bhagavad Gita symposium. I don't know, somebody outside of some big city, some ashram, maybe like 45 minutes outside of some city. And Prabhupada agreed to go, and it was like maybe 3 days or 4 days, like that, something. And so many of these big different gurus were there, and from very famous people, whose names we even probably recognize ourselves. And they were all talking about Bhagavad Gita, So Hari Swari said they arrived on the second day, and probably about noontime, the car had come and picked them up in the city and taken them there. And he said as soon as they arrived, all the different people sitting out front of the door to receive people and everything else, they all stood up as soon as Prabhupada got out like that. His presence was so dignified. And then the leaders said, well, Swamiji, it's so nice you're here. I'm very glad to receive you. The delegates are discussing this and that now. Do you want to go into the assembly hall and sit and listen to the other delegates, or do you want to rest a little bit privately before your turn comes? And Hari Swari said, probably sit privately, I will sit. So he took him into a little room on one side, and it opened directly onto the big assembly hall. And Hari Swari said that he sat down, and Prabhupada just started going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, walking. And he was mentioning this Swamiji, that Swamiji, this writer, this, one after another. He was mentioning their philosophy and what was wrong with it, and different points like that. And Hari Swari said he could see that, that Prabhupada wasn't really talking to him. He was talking about it. He was kind of nodding. But basically, he was just using him to get himself in the kind of consciousness he wanted to be in, the bhava, the state of existence, the perspective he wanted to be into. And Hari Swari said that Prabhupada was getting more and more disturbed. He was getting more and more furious, And so finally, the people came with this inside door to open it up to go into the assembly hall area. It was time for Prabhupada to come. And Hari Swari said he didn't know what was going to happen. He was going behind Prabhupada like, if he had to maybe, grab Prabhupada and run out of the room with him or something to keep him from being, attacked or something. Because Prabhupada was so, emotional, So the guy opened the door, smiling as Swamiji, and then Prabhupada came out like a bull, just going into the bullfighting arena. And the guy was opened the door, was like, saw him, and was just, you know, shocked. Just the back, and Prabhupada came out, and Hari Soi is going behind him. Oh my God, what's going to happen now? It's a big, big room, you know, with the bleachers and stuff like that. Apparently, there'd be several hundred people there, presenters and other people too. So Prabhupada went up to the podium. And as he remembered Hari Soi, he right away he started like, you know, chastising people, but criticizing different philosophies and what was wrong with them and everything else. It was just so like this antagonistic. And everybody else had been like, oh, Swamiji, Bhaktisiddhanta says, you don't criticize, I don't criticize. No. But Prabhupada wasn't like that. He was criticizing all these things and everything else. And Hari Soi said it was about, you know, almost two minutes before people could react. They were just like so, like, you know, their mouths hanging open, staring like this, and everything else. And finally, after about, you know, 2 minutes, some people started like reacting and you know, and complaining and standing up. And then other people started like defending Prabhupada's idea. And then this whole pandemonium broke out. And left and right, and Prabhupada was arguing with them, you know. And he said one Bengali lady, about maybe 35 years old, some philosopher, she stood up and she said, you're just trying to defend Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ideas. And Prabhupada said, I never mentioned Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Shut up and sit down. Like that. It was like her father talking to her or something. She was just like shocked. And she sat down, traumatized. So Hari Soi went on like this. Everyone was just, you know, arguing with each other, arguing with Prabhupada, and discussing and quoting. And after about maybe, you know, 10 minutes or so, then Prabhupada started to kind of slow things down and take control. And then everybody was laughing and peaceful again, you know. So he could see that Prabhupada just dealt so expertly in producing the bhava, you know, that he thought was appropriate, you know. So same way, you know, Yudhisthira. I would say probably also, he's also, you know, an expert devotee. He's also talking about these things and considering these things to see, like, how they will illuminate the real problem like that. You know, he's gone through so many things, and probably in the purports, of course, is talking about them. The previous one today was, of course, you know, what is it here? Api svit pariyabhuntas tvam. Yeah. Have you not taken care of old men and boys, yeah, and not dying with them? Yeah. So this is very, very, it's amazing. It's such a fundamental thing. Even though what I've heard of the Quran, it also talks a lot about sharing food and that kind of thing too. Yeah. When Prabhupada received some land in South India, I've heard this story. I think it was who told us, Hansudu. Prabhupada received a big piece of property in South India. And there were maybe like three or four villages on it. Yeah? And so then they were going to take responsibility for managing the whole thing. Devotees were asking what to do. Should we install deities in each village? And Prabhupada says something about, well, they worship Vishnu here, so you should have Vishnu form. Well, should we have big elaborate deity worship, Prabhupada, like our temples? No, simple. Should we have big elaborate deity worship like our temples, Prabhupada? No, simple. So finally, he got the idea that Prabhupada just wanted a clean place, a Vishnu deity. Then he said, if somebody is a little more brahminically inclined, they can come back in the evening a little bit early from their different work and take a bath, and they can unlock the temple, open it up, get everything ready. And then, very simple, and then everybody else, whatever they're cooking for dinner, they should bring all the cooking pots to the altar, and the pujari can put it all in front of the deities. And you can take a little bit from each pot and put it specifically on the deity's plate and say some nice prayers to offer it. And while the offering is going on, there should be a nice kirtan. And Prabhupada said, you'll see that people will start to compete with their kirtans like that. And he said, this is sufficient, you know. He said, then everybody can see what everybody else is eating, you know. If somebody is eating very well, they can say, oh, Mr. Smith is eating very well. You know? But he also works like an ass too. So, okay. And Mr. Jones, he's not eating very well. Why? What's going on? He's a decent person. What's wrong? You know. So in that way, he said it would remove all the envy that people feel. In the Quran, as we've heard it, the Prophet Muhammad, may his name be blessed, says, if you can afford fruit, of course, it's the desert too, and your neighbor can't, And you should smuggle it into the house, sneak it in the house where your neighbor won't know you've got it, so you won't feel disturbed. And you should be careful your children don't go outside eating it where your neighbor's children can see they're eating fruit. So food is just a big, big thing when you get down to it. You know, how many, if you eliminate all the places related to dining and cooking, you know, from any city like that, what would be left? You know, the actual city, the actual non-residential area. There's a whole separate room just for cooking. Of course, the other end of the business, a whole separate room for eliminating the cooking. So all in all, it's a big thing. Then after that, the proper distribution of food, and then everybody becomes, you know, very satisfied like that. And then we can cooperate for the main purpose, which is to do this, what Yudhishthira is doing, to stimulate our natural love for Krishna. Nitya Siddha, Krishna Prema, Sadhya Kabunaya, Shravanadi, Shudachitta, Karaje Udaya. Love of Krishna is not something to be gained from some other source. It's already there. And by hearing and chanting, etc., we wake it up. Like that. So it's a whole process. And then all the rest of these things are just to basically create a favorable circumstance like that. Yeah. So what I read about these two verses, my first impressions about them. Anybody have any comments now at this point?
I had a mute, so it's on free conferencing. Anybody? Sounds like chanting Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
No, I'm thoroughly enjoying the class. Please carry on.
Okay. What I was thinking that maybe we can do is this, because it's the end of the chapter. Let's go back and read through the verses. Disappearance of Krishna. Okay. Suvita Goswami said, 114.1, Arjuna went to Dwarka to see Lord Sri Krishna and other friends, and also to learn from the Lord of his activities. A few months passed, and Arjuna did not return. Maharaj Yudhishthira then began to observe some inauspicious omens, which were fearful in themselves. So maybe you've seen some of these yourselves. He saw that the direction of eternal time had changed, and this was very fearful. There were disruptions in the seasonal regularities. People in general had become very greedy, angry, deceitful. He saw that they were adopting foul means of livelihood. All ordinary transactions and dealings became polluted with cheating, even between friends. And in familial affairs, there was always misunderstanding between fathers, mothers, and sons, between well-wishers, and between brothers. Even between husband and wife, there is always strain and quarrel. In course of time, it came to pass that people in general became accustomed to greed, anger, pride. Maharaj Yudhishthira observed all these omens, spoke to his younger brother. Maharaj Yudhishthira said to his younger brother, Bhimasen, I sent Arjuna to Dwarka to meet his friends and to learn from the personality of Godhead Krishna of his program of work. Since he departed, 7 months have passed, yet he has not returned. I do not know factually how things are going there. Is he, Krishna, going to quit his earthly pastimes, as Devarishi Narada indicated? Has that time already arrived? For him only, all our kingly opulence, good wives, lives, progeny, control over our subjects, victory over our enemies, and future accommodations in higher planets have become possible. All this is due to his causeless mercy upon us. To see, O man, of a tiger's strength, how many miseries due to celestial influences, earthly reactions, bodily pains, all very dangerous in themselves, are foreboding danger in the near future by diluting our intelligence. The left side of my body, my thighs, arms, and eyes are all quivering again and again. I'm having heart palpitations due to fear. All this indicates undesirable happenings. To see Obima, the she-jackal, cries the rising sun and vomits fire, and how the dogs bark at me fearlessly. Obima saying, tiger amongst men. Now useful animals like cows are passing on my left side, and lower animals like the asses are circumambulating me. My horses appear to weep upon seeing me. Just see, this pigeon is like a messenger of death. The shrieks of the owls and their rival crows make my heart tremble. It appears they want to make a void of the whole universe. To see how this smoke encircles the sky, it appears that the earth and mountains are throbbing. Just hear the cloudless thunder and see the bolts from the blue. The wind blows violently, blasting dust everywhere and creating darkness. Clouds are raining everywhere with bloody disasters. The rays of the sun are declining and the stars appear to be fighting amongst themselves. Confused living entities appear to be ablaze and weeping. Rivers, tributaries, ponds, reservoirs, and the mind are all perturbed. Butter no longer ignites fire. What is this extraordinary time? What is going to happen? The calves do not suck the teats of the cows, nor do the cows give milk. They are standing, crying, tears in their eyes, and the bulls take no pleasure in the pasturing grounds. The deities seem to be crying in the temple, lamenting and perspiring. They seem about to leave. All the cities, villages, towns, gardens, mines, hermitages are now devoid of beauty and bereft of all happiness. I do not know what sort of calamities are now awaiting us. I think that all these earthly disturbances indicate some greater loss to the good fortune of the world. The world was fortunate to have been marked with the footprint of the lotus feet of the Lord. These signs indicate that this will no longer be. 1.14.22. O Brahmana Shonaka, when Maharaj Yudhisthira was reading the inauspicious signs on the earth at that time, was thus thinking to himself, Arjuna came back from the city of Dwarka, Yadus. When he bowed at his feet, the king saw that his dejection was unprecedented. His head was down and tears lighted from his lotus eyes. Seeing Arjuna pale due to heartfelt anxieties, the king remembered the indications of the sage Narada, questioned him, and questioned him in the midst of his friends. Maharaj Yudhisthira said, my dear brother, please tell me whether our friends and relatives, that is Madhu, Bhoja, Dasara, Arha, Sutvata, Andak, and the members of the Yadu family are all passing their days in happiness. Is my respectable grandfather, Surasen, in a happy mood? And are my maternal uncle, Vasudeva, and his younger brothers all doing well? His seven wives, headed by Devaki, are all sisters, and they and their sons and daughters-in-law are all happy. Are they happy? Sons and daughters-in-laws. Are Ugrasena, whose son was the mischievous Kangsa, and his younger brother still living? Ugrasena. Are Hridik and his son Kritavarma happy? Are Akura, Jayanta, Gada, Sharana, Satrujit all happy? How is Balaram, the personality of Godhead and the protector of the devotees? How is Pradyumna, the great general of the Vrishni family? Is he happy? Aniruddha, further expansion of personality of Godhead, faring well? Are all the chieftain sons of Lord Krishna, Sushena, Charadeshna, Samba, the son of Jambavati and Rishabha, along with their sons, doing well? Also Shutadev, Uddhava, others, Nanda Sunanda, other leaders of liberated souls who are constant companions of the Lord and are protected by Lord Krishna and Balaram, are they all doing well in their respective functions? Do they who are eternally bound in friendship with us remember our welfare? Is Lord Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead, who gives pleasure to the cows, the senses, and the brahmanas, who is very affectionate towards his devotees, enjoying the pious assembly at Durga Puri, surrounded by friends. The original personality of Godhead, the enjoyer, and Balaram, the primeval Lord Ananta, are staying in the ocean of the Yadu dynasty for the welfare, protection, and general progress of the entire universe. And the members of the Yadu dynasty, being protected by the arms of the Lord, are enjoying life like the residents of the spiritual sky. Simply by ministering comforts at the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the most important, which is the most important of all services, the queens of Dwarka, headed by Satyabhama, induced the Lord to conquer the demigods. As the queens enjoyed things that were, which are the prerogatives of the wives of the controller of the thunderbolt. The great assembly, the great heroes of the Yadu dynasty, being protected by the arms of Lord Sri Krishna, always remained fearless in every respect, and therefore their feet trampled over the Sudharma assembly house, which the best demigods deserved, but which was taken away from them. My brother Arjuna, please tell me whether your health is all right. You appear to have lost your bodily luster. Is this due to your others disrespecting and neglecting you because of your long stay in Dwarka? Has someone addressed you with unfriendly words or threatened you? Could you not give charity to one who asked, or could you not keep a promise to someone? You are always a protector of the deserving living beings, such as brahmanas, cows, children, women, and the diseased. Could you not give them protection when they approached you for shelter? Have you contacted a woman of impeachable character? Or have you been properly, or have you not properly treated a deserving woman? Or have you been defeated on the way by someone who is either inferior or equal to you? Or have you not taken care of old men and boys who deserve to dine with you? Have you left them taking your meals alone? Have you committed some unpardonable mistake which is considered to be abominable? Or is it that you are feeling empty for all time because you have lost your most intimate friend, Lord Krishna? My brother Arjuna, I can think of no other reason for you becoming so dejected. Jai. So Prabhupada ki jai. So Bhagavatam ki jai. Wow. So, you know, why do we need to hear this? Yeah. Because hopefully this will wake us up to remembering, you know, our own position, that actually we do have a friend, we do have a home, we do have a place, and things are supposed to be. At every moment in the mode of goodness, knowledge is increasing. So if we're actually connected to Krishna, then the super soul, everything else, then we feel he's here, we're here with him. And we live in the material world as a byproduct. And basically, we're with Krishna. We look at the material world, our material existence from time to time to keep things going properly. You know? But even then, we can see how it all is being connected to Krishna. And therefore, whatever we do for Krishna has this feeling of complete utility. You know, it's satisfying everything and everybody. It's not that I have to do this, then that. Shraddha Shabda Vishpas Kahi Sudhridhanish Joy Krishna Bhakti Koila Sarva Karma Kritahoi. A faithful person is somebody who has realized, has faith, is determined to go ahead in this conviction that just by engaging in bhakti yoga, everything else will automatically be taken care of. And as we get the more intense connection, it becomes more refined, more specific, more exact. Until finally, of course, it's coming like Arjuna and Krishna with the battle of Kurukshetra, where it wasn't no possibility of being on the, you know, on the platform of rituals or the platform of even jnana for the most part. Maybe some jnana, some strategies and philosophy. But many times it was just very specific in the tricks and movements and dancing, you know, with the chariot dancing this way and that way and Arjuna shooting this way and that way. And that's what was required. To be that close with Krishna, to be able to take care of the situation like that. And so how to do that? By engaging in this Lila Smarnam. There's five elements to bhava. Vibhava, Anubhava, Sattvika Bhava, Vyabhichari Bhava, and Stai Bhava. And of course, bhava, when it becomes intense, broad, deep, wide, then it becomes prema. Same thing. The green mango becomes the red mango. Yeah. So the stimulus, vibhava, can be either alambana or udipana. Alambana is Krishna himself. And udipana can be bhagavata, can be the things in terms of Bhagavan. So here we see how the devotees are reacting to the situation like that. And we can maybe get a little bit of appreciation that we have to be in the same level of, you know, stimulating our Sai Baba, our fundamental relationship to Krishna as a friend, a protector, you know, whatever it is like that. And of course, the most intense maybe is Lord Chaitanya at Rath Yatra, the separation he's feeling. Of course, well, more intensely Gambhira, but in general, as well, a general perspective, Lord Chaitanya at Rath Yatra is showing us how the feelings of the Vrijbasis, what they felt like when they saw Krishna, Kshetra, and especially Radharani, he's going into all these details about her sentiments and idea like that. You know? So, you know, this is Bila Smarnam. You know? So any comments now?
Well, Maharaj, I do have a question that came up yesterday. You know, so it was about the previous verse of this, where Maharaj Yudhisthira is inquiring, saying, maybe you, Arjuna, you came across a woman who is has a spoiled character, impeachable character, and you either didn't treat a deserving woman well, or you came in contact with an impeachable woman. And then in the purport, Srila Prabhupada talks about two principles in the Varnashram system, Uttama, and what was the other term? Adama. So Uttama is it's okay for a higher caste, Brahmana or Kshatriya, to marry lower class ladies or to have contact with them. But it's not allowed that those who are higher class women, like Kshatriya or from Brahmana families, to have contact with men from lower families. And he even says that that would produce a useless population. And the question is, so why is it that that would happen? Why it would be considered elevated? The population would be elevated by having contact with higher caste men, where the opposite is true. Adama, that if you come in contact with lower class men, then the higher class women will become polluted.
I don't know. Maybe it's because boys are better than girls.
Oh, I knew it.
I knew it. Yeah. Mommy and daddy like boys better than girls. I don't know. I see that, for example, like, a, you know, we don't talk all about it. We talk something about polygamy. Okay. I may probably mention this. I was giving class in Peru several years ago. Of course, a lot of tourists going through there. So in that class that night, some like tourists have come in and went, there was one, I think maybe like, you know, Norwegian or something, the European, it's could be anything, it was a kind of, you know, European girl, blonde haired and a couple friends. And so during the class, this point came up about polygamy. Okay. And then she said, well, okay, I can, you know, accept polygamy as being a social thing if you also accept polyandria. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know what the word meant exactly, but I figured it out right away, what she's saying, you know. Of course, andros means male, you know. And so, so her idea is that it's fair that if you're going to allow, you know, one man to have several wives, then you should also allow one girl to have, in some kind of legitimate, controlled fashion, several husbands. And so I don't know what to say because it seems like, you know, it seems like fair, you know, justice, you know. And so, but because I'm a Madhyamadikari here, and I was thinking, okay, then, yeah, eventually, you know, my question will be answered. Let's go on with the process. So I found it, and it's in the story of the Prachetas. They came out of the water after doing austerities, and then they all married the daughter of, I think it was Pran Lochan, or somebody. You know, they had one daughter. And so that's the example of polyandria, one girl with several husbands. And that was the example that Draupadi accepted as being, you know, Shastric, because she wasn't going to marry five husbands. But then she got this example of the Pachetas and history that was being accepted and was, you know, was a precedent and other things too. So then she accepted it. Well, okay, it's okay. So Prabhupada says that the problem with polyandria is that natural feminine mentality, just like there are gross differences in the body, there are also subtle differences in the subtle body. It's fixed, even more fixed than the gross body. So when you got a female mentality, you know, or a male mentality, or a Kshatriya mentality, and it's fixed, So he said the natural inclination for feminine mentality is to be attached to one man. So a mother is a son, or she'll be attached to her husband, or she'll be attached to her father. You know, my daddy. Leave my daddy alone. And so it's very difficult, you know, for a girl to give equal affection to different husbands. And since a very qualified girl, she can do this. If she doesn't do that, then there'll automatically be conflict. And so, of course, Draupadi is a qualified person, but even she couldn't do it. She was pretending to do it. Oh, Bhima, nobody loves me but you. You're the only husband who really loves me. Do this and that. You know? But then secretly, she was giving her love and affection to Arjuna.
Uh-huh.
And that's why she fell down on the way back. That was a sin she committed. You know? Yeah. So that's like an example of so specifically, I don't know, it's also called Anuloma and Pratiloma, no?
Yeah.
And Sutta Goswami, well, before that, yeah, the first Sutta Goswami, the one that Lord Balaram killed, he was from Anuloma? He was from the other combination like that, which was at that time especially, was a very disgusting birth. But the sages had elevated him. You know? But still, he didn't stand up when Balaram came in, so Lord Balaram killed him. And put his son, Ugrashrava, who's the Sutta Goswami we're hearing right now, on the seat like that in his place. So he was from example also from a contact between men and women. It was known as Uttama and Adama. Yeah. Contact of a Brahmana with a Kshatriya woman is Uttama, but contact of a Kshatriya with a Brahmana woman is Adama and is therefore condemned. Yeah. A woman approaching a man for contact should never be refused, but at the same time the discretion as above mentioned may also be considered. Yeah.
Can I put forward a philosophical speculation?
Why not?
Okay. What about since women are the fairer sex, the weaker sex, if they are in fact women, in other words, if they bear children, you know, maybe if they're macho people that are women's body, you know, they join the army and something like that. They're another species almost. But, you know, for the ones that are really women, you know, they have children, you know. So when you have children, you're in a very vulnerable position if you don't have a husband, somebody to protect you and to go out and make a living, you know, because how are you going to take care of the children? So it's very easy for them to be polluted, just as Arjuna was in anxiety that if all the men are killed, then the women will become polluted and produce unwanted population. So in a society where it's supposed to, you know, have a social upliftment, then women are naturally protected because they have to raise a family, which is a real job. So they need somebody to protect them, to look after them. So if they mix with lower class men because they are in the position of having to be dependent, much more dependent than a man, then therefore they would it would be much easier to compromise their principles. That's my speculation.
Also, Prabhupada talks about the two fact that there should be a big age difference. I've seen some people, you know, Prabhupada is saying that when the lady is older than the man, it's very difficult for her to feel like naturally respectful to him because she's older, she's been through more experiences, so many things. In some cases, I saw it working, you know, even disciples I had, but then in the end, it didn't work. Yeah, yeah. It was very difficult for the girl to feel this naturally respectful to her husband. And of course, the age difference is 5 or 6, 7, 8 years. Maybe I was much younger, then it's just, you know, very natural just to feel like my husband is more like my protector and like that. So same way, if the wife is a brahmana, which means she's going to be clever, more austere, more clean, more subtle, and all of her friends and sisters are all going to be in the same class, and she's dealing with this kind of rough and impetuous, you know, kshatriya guy, then also it's going to be like a difficult situation, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For her,
that's a very
submissive. Yeah. Anyway.
I like that. That's very, very good.
In our case, we have no problem with this. We're all Malechas and Yavanas. Like maybe if a Malechia girl shouldn't marry a Yavana boy or something.
Actually, I have seen stuff like that in the Mano Samhita summary. I haven't read the Mano Samhita.
Oh, my gosh.
That's fine. Yeah, it says like that, you know, like a dog eater shouldn't.
There's some devotees here who are.
Otherwise, they become a Rakshasa. There it is, like that.
One devotee here is actually a urologist, and I asked him, "Well, what does that mean?" He said, "Well, I have to deal with everything that has to do with urine, you know." But he said, "But I don't deal with stool." It was like, I guess being a proctologist is even worse than being a urologist. All the urologists look down upon the proctologists. See, the thing is, it's funny because we're male devotees, we'll be detached from these things. But at the same time, too, is that I've seen this. There's so many people that they live this way, and some of them, in the mode of ignorance, they increase it. They really emphasize these kind of bodily conception things. And if you give them some opportunity to adjust it, okay, it can be sane, so they can get out of this place. But if not, then they just get totally attached to stupidity, and then distorted stupidity, like that. So these social rules, I guess, also Parasara, where a lot of these rules are, his basic indication is that he gives us some rules about these things for Kali Yuga, but he's saying that, you know, you can't give rules for everything because Kali Yuga is so perverted. So therefore, you should approach a sadhaka totally dedicated to spiritual life to ask for these practical standards. If you haven't got one of those, a synod of six brahmanas can come to the same conclusion about what to do like that, you know. For example, you know, in India, there's no question about a boy and a girl associating before the marriage. You know, things are changing now, but even now, I see the movies and stuff are still not like, you know, scope for that really. You know? And so, but in our ISKCON society, we haven't got all the system for people to become, you know, connected and everything else. So sometimes in our temples, yeah, then people, boy and girl, even in Brahmacharini, Brahmachari Ashram, then want to associate and get to know each other and consider life and their goals and their values and their character. So in ISKCON, then I noticed different temples, for example, in Spain, which is a much more formal European country, then they have a certain standard about what you can do. Okay, you can associate together in public places. You can, you know, talk or whatever, read the Krishna book together in the temple room. And that kind of stuff, you know, for 1 month. Then you got to make a decision, you know. Whereas other countries, it's different standard depending upon local standard. But it seems like, you know, enough devotees get together, talk about things sanely, and they make this intuitively, the energy is there and everything else, some scriptural quotes, and we can make these practical decisions about things. But all of this, again, is just to create the proper ambience, no? Where we can do the real thing, which is into the Bhagavad Dharma, which is to stimulate, you know, stimulate the root. You know? Otherwise, all these things are a complete waste of time. You know, women, men, everything else. You know? The real thing is, you know, how the Krishna Katha is becoming more and more intense as a choir, as a congregational chanting of the glories of the Lord is the essence of all spiritual ecstasy. As a congregation, you know, chanting, having good microphone system, having good location for the kirtan, having a good drama, so all the things come out at the right time like that. When you see these things in Manipur, my experience there, the Gorpanian Festival, other things like that, you're intoxicated for like, you know, three or four days afterwards. You just feel high, intoxicated from these experiences, just from nice hearing and chanting and kirtan. And by then it's time for another festival, you know? So then we can really, you know, get up to the level of escape velocity in this material world. Again, the nice thing is this whole section of Vajrayana and Ratha Yatra is a very nice advanced section for meditation, contemplation, these things. So anybody else need final comments like that?
I have a question. Maharaj, earlier in the class you were making reference to the Quran speaking about taking a food.
Yeah.
As we're reading through this section, the disappearance of Krishna, every time we hear Krishna's name, mention of Krishna, thought of Krishna, we have such a vivid, even at our neophyte fallen stage, we have, at least on a theoretical level, a very lucid, clear, descriptive vision of Krishna in our mind. I don't know how much you know about the Quran, but what is their conception? Who is Allah? What can you tell us about Allah? And I only ask the question because sometimes we speak and we'll say something like, you can chant any name of God you like Krishna or Jehovah or Allah. Or what can you tell us about Allah in the Muslim faith?
Well, it was when here I'm trying to dig in someplace in the United States and go in some depth. So I'm trying to work here in Tennessee. And one of the people we've contacted so far is Professor Ron Messier, M-E-S-S-I-E-R. He's a very nice person. You know? He's retired, but he's very active here still. His body is still very good health. And actually, he's been in charge of a big archaeological project he started in Morocco. So he's like kind of like a national hero there even. So he's really enthusiastic about what we're doing and stuff and trying to cooperate. And he's Episcopalian, which I was too before also. He wrote a book called Jesus Christ, One Man, Two Faiths. And it's a nice book. It's easy to read. And he's saying, I thought so. But he said, you just can't just pick up the Quran and start reading it. Forget it. You know, it's like you need like a good study guide and everything else. You know? And beyond that, the Quran is technically speaking, if it's not in Arabic, it's not the Quran. You know? And as far as I understand, the reason for that is that it's not such a great book like logically and ontologically and everything else like that. The real strength of it lies in the beauty and the sensuous stimulation of the poetry, the sound like that. So when it's being chanted, properly as recitation, then the words really penetrate. And even though they're very simple like that and stuff, they penetrate. You know? And so that's the value. So if you take it out of Arab and put it in some other language, it just seems like a kind of superficial thing. Actually, I've been reading the Britannica. That's why I'm tired. And it seems that the history of Hebrewism, it's actually a lot more is developing now from discovering new archaeological sites and everything else. But people weren't so stupid. You know, they had a lot of developed theological ideas in many ways. You know? And so the Hebrew culture and everything else was going through many phases, looking at it that way. But of course, the Quran is just produced by one person. Although he's coming out of this whole tradition, the Quran talks a lot. I forgot, Dr. Messier in this point was making this point that the Jesus Christ is mentioned, I forget how many times in the Quran, like, 745 times or something, he's mentioned. And at the final battle, when the final battle comes between good and evil, the person who leads the battle is not Prophet Muhammad, it's Jesus Christ. He comes and leads the battle against evil, you know. So it's like Islam very much has a whole tradition of being, a Christian religion in that sense. They claim that the house of David and this kind of stuff, that Jesus was in the house of David, and they claim they're descent from another family, but they claim it from the same thing. I guess Solomon was a patriarch for everybody, you know, Solomon. And then as far as I know, the general thing is kind of like Bhagavad Gita, like Paramatma. His hands are everywhere. He sees everything. He says everything. He rewards. But he's like very much, like Mahavishnu, like that kind of combination of Mahavishnu and Yamaraj. He creates everything in the part, like Purusha avatars. And other than that, I don't think there's a whole lot of like intimate dealings with specific people like that. In the Bible, I think there is some, like Moses and different people like that. God was actually dealing with some of them, he would walk with them and talk with them or something. But there's one thing which is called Muhammad's Mirage, the dream of Muhammad. And one devotee who's Islamic was telling me that every Muhammadan knows this. And it describes how one night the angel, the messenger, maybe it was Gabriel, came and took Muhammad out of his room and took him up higher and higher and higher. And finally, they came to the highest heaven. And the grandfather, what's his name? Adam, was walking out after being in the presence of God. And he said, okay, now you got to make a plea. to God when you see him, to lower the standard a little bit. Because you're not gonna, these guys aren't going to be able to keep the standard, so you got to lower a little bit. Pray to him. Yeah. So then just before he went in to see the God, the angel took the blood cloth out of his heart, which creates fear of death, you know. And then he said to go on in, and the prophet said, well, aren't you going to go with me? He said, no, I can't go, you know. So then he went in, there was a room, and there was a curtain, very nice curtain, and God was talking to him behind the curtain. And then he went behind the curtain. You know? It's interesting because Garbhodakshaya Vishnu thinks almost the same way, the way Brahma sees Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Like that. So he saw him, you know, face to face. You know? And so it's like that conception is there, but it's just like, it's about, I think this boy was saying, it's about the highest personal conception you'll find. But yeah, it's in there. He's a person. You can see him face to face. Somebody can. But it's like, you know, it's not emphasized. But we're talking to Muslims. It's very common. Any Muslim a little bit educated will know about Muhammad's mirage. And I've seen it some places like that. So that's about all I know.
Someone told me that there was there's no pictures or paintings of
anybody,
Muhammad or Allah.
Yeah, because the Allah and who else? Muhammad and his brother Ali, I think. At least them, that is considered blasphemous because the whole thing there was so much idolatry going on, you know. And you see in the Bible talks about idolatry, but right along with it, almost invariably, it says they had these idols, and they were engaging in fornication and bribery. You know, almost always, almost every time, there was nobody engaging in sattvic, you know, idolatry. So Muhammad just said no deity worship, you know, like that. And so that's why they can't be pictures. I think even generally speaking of people. So if you go to Radha Govinda Temple, there were so many beautiful carvings of Govardhan Leela and everything else in the walls. You just see all the faces have been systematically, you know, chipped off like that, chiseled off like that. It's really, you know, heartbreaking. So the bodies can be there, but the way it went ahead and got rid of all the faces like that. You know? Because that's why, because this is blasphemous to make an image of any of something like that. You know?
Interesting.
Yeah. When Jayavadharma, the Muslims came to one Vaishnava Sadhu and they said, God is not happy when you make an image and worship him. He is disgusted with this. You know? So then the Vaishnava said, well, but you the name, the word Allah is sacred. And they said, yes, it's sacred. You know, we'll kill somebody who takes this name improperly. And they said, but that's also still a material element, you know, whether it's sound or smell or taste or touch or vision. These are all elements of the material world. And so if a certain sound can, with the material elements can be worshipable, why not a visual form? You know? So I use that argument sometimes. And anyway, the Muslim guys were really like bewildered by this. They got on their horses and went away and they come back and argue tomorrow. You know? But it's a very nice argument. Yeah, the form is there and without the sound, the name is respected especially. You know? I guess we should go now. Actually, I gotta get going ahead. We're gonna go visit somebody who's been in the hospital with he had from old age two collapsed vertebrae, and the amazing his whole surgery thing for like 6 hours. 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 6-7 o'clock in the afternoon, the surgeons were all working away and go out for a coffee break, come back, and now he's recovering. You know? Wow, Western surgery, Kizai.
Well, thank you, Mark.
Thank you so much for class.
And then tomorrow, you see Monday though, right? Monday you all start with the next Arjuna's response. You know?
Yeah.
I didn't get Mahaprasadam. Pujari didn't give me any Maha. That's why I'm depressed. Okay, thank you very much for your association. These classes are so enlightening to me. You know?
Hi, I'm
glad to see
you.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Everybody. Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna.